I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
And we're here to class up wrestling for the 1,000th time. Not really.
I mean, it's not our 1,000th
time. For like the 30-somethingth time, I think.
I think we're like 28. I don't know. I don't have the number in front of me.
I don't know. I should look that up.
I'm wearing socks, so I can't really count right now.
Oh. Oh, no. So, something above 10, that's all we can tell you.
Yes. Something above 10.
But as far as Raw goes, Raw had their 1,000th celebration.
And it was indeed a celebration.
Yes, it was. And, I mean, we've said it before, like, episode 1001 and 1002 will be, like, the real test for the new 3-hour thing. But like,
exactly. We knew that, you know, Raw 1000 had the biggest potential as far as the 3-hour and having plenty of material for it.
Right.
But you're right, the real test, the real, you know, proverbial rubber meeting the road or whatever, is definitely going to be next week and the week after and so on and so forth. It'll be interesting. It will be interesting to see.
Yes. But let's try and do this segment by segment.
Okay.
I might miss and skip and jump, but we'll see. So we open with Vince McMahon, so right away, super
fantastic.
Plus, fantastic, yes. Way to open.
And okay, you gotta point out that it seemed like Vince was legitimately having a moment. Like he looked a little, you know, moist in the eyes, and he looked genuinely touched, and I thought that was pretty cool, you know.
Well, like, you know,
I mean, maybe he's just getting older, and he's just, you know, a little bit more sentimental. Yeah, I mean, the dude was dropping some major tears for whenever Triple H relieved him of his duties last year.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It seemed like a pretty special moment to him personally, and I thought that was pretty cool.
I mean, it's a nice way to, like, you know, to really kick it off. Like, yeah, that's the guy, and you know,
yeah.
And he got to be in that like pseudo face Vince mode, where we could get the thank you Vince chant and everything.
Yeah, I mean, because we've seen him in the anniversary episodes. I think the last one was like the 15-year. I think that was the one where Vince pretty much just bit the bullet of every finisher of every wrestler.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, it was a little bit more of a hokey kind of thing, but this one seemed, I mean, obviously bigger. Like this was probably the biggest Raw I've ever. Like as far as them putting effort into the production and everything that changed, everything that happened, it seemed like they just pulled any string that they could.
Yeah. So, I was pleased.
I was very pleased.
It still felt a little weird for Vince to be like, "Let's celebrate DX."
Yeah.
And I'd be like, "I don't think you guys get along. I may be fuzzy on my memory, but last I recall, Vince would not be happy that DX was in the building."
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed DX being there.
I really enjoyed seeing all of DX there.
Yes.
That was, I mean, I knew seeing Road Dogg would be a definite thing that could happen because, you know, he's been working with the company for a while now. At least in the past year, I think. And I think being an agent, I want to say. And then Sean Waltman, he's been in close contact with the company lately, so he was in there good. Billy Gunn, everyone was kind of unsure about. I'm not sure exactly for what reason. I know there's some backstage issues going on or whatever, but I have no idea what that is. But nevertheless, he was there, and it was fantastic, and not at all surprised that China wasn't there, because I'm pretty sure WWE doesn't want a porn star on there.
Yes. No, that was my first. That was my first thing when they started coming. I was like, "Let me see if China's there." Nope. They still were like, "Everybody who was on the tank is coming back," and I'm like, "Not one of them." So
was she on the tank? I don't remember that.
She was on the tank, or I don't know if she was actually on, but okay. She was part of the invasion. Yeah.
Okay.
But I think that might have been like my biggest little mini markout of the night. Because, like, well, like, a lot of
these
were, like...
did you have, like, a full markout?
Well, I'm saying, like, I knew The Rock was coming back. You know, I knew DX is coming back.
I still had one big markout moment, but we'll get to it. And I'll so, let like, you know when it happens.
Like a lot of these, yeah. you know, big deal things. And a lot of them I didn't know, but I was, you know, expecting it. I wasn't surprised. And so, like, right. when Triple H does that, you know, didn't there used to be more of us? That was my, like, yeah. they're going to bring everybody back.
It was one of those things where it's just like, it was one of those rare moments where everything that the internet had been saying and hoping would happen, and it actually happened. You know, I wasn't really expecting it, but it was a nice moment, and I'm glad they decided to remember that DX is more than just two guys.
Right. And I thought it was really good to have Damian Sandow come out during it.
I was so happy about that.
I mean,
and I had a bunch of friends over at the apartment, except for Joel, because Joel's lame and didn't show up.
Yeah. Prior but commitments suck.
Anyways, moving on. We had our friend, he shall be known as John. He had no idea who Sandow was. He's an occasional watcher. Or he's an occasional watcher of Raw, which means he definitely doesn't watch SmackDown. So he wasn't with us when we watched Money in the Bank. So this was his first introduction, and as soon as the guy started opening his mouth, he looked at me and was like, yeah, all right, I like this guy. And, you know, to get the John approval is a pretty high regard, right there. Yeah, because he doesn't really approve of a lot of people.
He watches wrestling in a darkened room but with closed shutters.
Exactly. Everyone, since you wouldn't know, John is probably the most pretentious person I've ever met. In a good way, not in like a snobby way, but he has his opinion, and he'll stick to it, and if he says something dumb, it's going to be dumb to him forever.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is like, you know, a lot of this, like, hey, remember that guy stuff is cool, but it's really cool that they can take this DX reunion and, you know, a lot of people, probably a lot of casual fans, that was their first introduction to Damian Sandow, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, it was cool to just, like, I mean, of course he has to, you know, get totally beat up by these guys, but to kind of start up, like, and this is the next chunk of wrestling. And so.
Right. It was, yeah, I mean, we all knew he was pretty much going to eat it, but he interacted with them a little bit differently than most people do.
Right.
I thought it was fantastic. I thought he played off of them very well. He is a fantastic speaker. He's fantastic on the mic for them.
Yeah. So. I'm excited for him to be in more stuff.
Me too.
We get next a 6-man tag match that all I really care about is Jericho and Ziggler continuing to have feud seeds being planted.
And we got to see I don't know if it was a privilege, it was more like torture, seeing Mysterio and Sin Cara in the same match. Hooray.
Yep.
And Del Rio. Hooray.
Well,
fake enthusiasm. Hooray.
Were you one of the ones, when we made our WrestleMania 29 predictions, did you predict mask versus mask match?
I don't even remember.
I predicted that. I mean, I've predicted that like 2 or maybe 3 years in a row now, ever since Sin Cara came out.
I predicted Colt Cabana to be in the company by now, dude.
So every time I see him close together, I'm like, that's the seeds! I'm going to get one right someday! But, nope. Yeah. I don't know. I really want Jericho and Ziggler feud. That's almost what I want the most of now.
Most?
To pick a feud, if I can't say go back to Daniel Bryan and CM Punk again, and I can't bring back anybody who, like, you know, is retired.
Basically, you're going, like, after a feud that hasn't happened yet.
Yes, I think that might be my number one choice.
So. I can get behind that.
Or a Punk and Ziggler. I could really get behind a Punk and Ziggler.
Yeah, because we really didn't get that around Royal Rumble. We got the match. It was a great match, but not really a rivalry.
Yeah, I could see them going for a couple of months.
Yeah.
Next up, we have
AJ and Layla, but what we really have is the return of Mae Young's child.
Meet my mark-out moment right there. Best payoff ever for a storyline. Dear Lord. Okay, and then just I mean, because the hand was introduced in the year 2000, if I'm not mistaken. So the hand really should only be 12 years old, and he looked a lot older than that. But putting that in, you know, suspending that in disbelief, that was the best payoff ever, and something I never thought they would ever do. I thought it was fantastic, and I'm still speechless by it.
The internet warmed so greatly to this. I was really surprised. Because, like, after the hatred of Hornswoggle a few weeks ago, like, that it feels like a similar...
Well, see, I mean, the Hornswoggle thing, they dip into that well way too often.
No, I understand that, and I don't disagree.
But this was just completely unexpected. Like, yeah, they mentioned it. They'll mention it every now and then, just kind of poke fun at it. But they'll never go back to it like that. My only regret is that Mark Henry was not there in some fashion. Like,
I am still hoping for one more Hall of Pain run. And this, oh, yeah. And this would have undermined it. If, you know, and I don't know if we're ever going to get a good Hall of Pain storyline like we had, you know, when he was on top. And if we don't, yeah, I would throw it all away for Mark Henry to be hanging out there. But if you can guarantee me that we would get another Hall of Pain run in the near future, then I would say don't put him in this. Don't, you know.
Oh,
because that would undercut
just in that just that one spot, like that, what, 5 second spot.
I don't know. I mean, it's too risky. I'd have put him there. I would have put him back.
Whatever. But even if he was just in the background, just shaking his head, like, you know.
I was in this storyline.
Or if he was just like, that ain't my child. We could make it a Mari situation.
I mean, I really like that whole segment. The whole, like, oh, we've gone crazy over the years. Well, to go back to the very beginning, like, they had that little montage video of, you know, everything, and it was like, oh, this is the good and the bad of Raw. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't,
yeah,
the top,
like,
moment.
We were celebrating the high moments and celebrating the lowbrow moments.
Yeah.
You know. That's what Raw is. It's just a mixture of all of that. That's the way it's always been. It seems like it's got to always be that way for it to work, and it seems, I mean, I'm sure it evolved in a little bit since then. Like, we don't get as much of the big slapstick stuff that we used to get. Like Mae Young giving birth to a hand or just anything along those lines. But we still kind of have more of the lowbrow stuff every now and then. And it just seems to fit. Like, it just seems to work with this show and this format. And I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Not really making a point there. I'm just, you know, kind of stating.
Next up, the Funkasaurus filler.
I don't even remember who did he squash.
Swagger.
Oh God, yeah, and that was really quick.
Yeah.
And I mean, and this is the point that I was making with the friends that were over. You know, everyone is talking about how there's always a big post-WrestleMania purge of the roster over the summer, and we hadn't gotten that at all, I don't think.
No.
The only people that's left the company is the Bella Twins, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people are saying that, you know, they're just kind of holding out until Raw 1000, then Raw 1000, then we'll get the big roster purge. And I would have to think Swagger's on that list. If not at the top.
You think?
Yeah, it's just the only relevance he's had in the past year and a half is being,
with Ziggler.
Yeah, Ziggler's
being
partner.
second fiddle Ziggler, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, he still shows up often enough that I feel like they want him. I mean, it feels like they don't have anything for him.
Right.
But
I mean, that's usually when they start letting people go, when they just consistently don't have something for that guy.
I mean, you know, there's always something every year that catches me off guard. I'm like, really? That guy's going. So, maybe. I'm sure we'll find out in the next month or so.
Yeah.
Also worth mentioning, Dude Love came back for this segment.
Yeah, he did.
I was happy about that. I would have liked more Mick Foley in my Raw 1000.
But I mean, you gotta fit him in where you can fit him in, you know.
I think we fit him in everywhere.
I know you think that.
I want a Mick Foley tribute show.
I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm just trying to be reasonable.
I want Mick Foley and John Morrison to have their own show.
If you make it a 3-man show and throw in Chris Masters, you have yourself a deal.
I mean, I'm okay with that. Like,
okay then.
All right. I have nothing special against Chris Masters.
Joel, get on the bat phone. We'll start producing.
There you go. Oh, was the wedding next? I guess.
I believe so. Yes.
Yes, we had a wedding. And important whatsama is AJ is to be the new general manager of Raw.
That's the big news that came out of it. I was kind of expecting a kind of a car wreck situation when they brought in Slick as the minister. Because the guy is kind of a wild card sometimes. But, you know, he was really fun, he was really entertaining, and it worked out, you know.
It did work out.
And then, I don't know, McMahon came out, and I was just like, of course they would throw him in the storyline. And then, of course, you know, we find out it's not the case. But it's just like, I'm not surprised here.
I mean, on one hand, I'm still totally high on AJ right now, and I'm like, absolutely, AJ every day, every week,
yeah,
every segment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly what this move accomplishes. It gives AJ more of a reason to be on the TV.
Right.
Past and, this Daniel Bryan thing.
And I mean, I think
they know they
the
can't
thing.
Keep that up.
Right. I mean, on the other hand, like, storyline, there's absolutely no reason why AJ should be the general manager.
No, not at all. And if you think the board of directors are involved in any way, there's no way in the world they would put her in charge.
Right.
As a reasonable business move, you go from, like, you go from an anonymous computer to
executive vice president status.
Triple H to guy in a suit with John Laurinaitis, and then you put it into what they've called a mentally unstable little girl.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where, I mean, of course, you know, they're all mentally unstable, but that's besides the point. That's the point she was making, actually. But
yes, with the hand.
With the hand, with Hacksaw, with R-Truth, and Roddy Piper jump roping with Little Jimmy. Yep. So, I mean, it. Again, gotta suspend your disbelief and just,
I mean,
go with it.
That's one thing where I'm like, I wonder how long this will take. Because, you know, general managers only last for so long.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, the longest one we had was the anonymous general manager, at least the longest in nowadays.
It did feel the longest.
It felt really, really,
like it felt really,
really
long.
Long. Yeah.
And the
but
thing,
I know guys like Mike Adamly and, well, yeah, basically Mike Adamly didn't last very long. Or Vicky Guerrero when she was the general manager or the interim general manager or whatever.
Yeah.
Didn't last very long.
Well, I still feel a heel general manager is always going to work better than a face general manager. Just, you know, and that might change someday, but, like, just the bleed over of McMahon being in charge and the getting to watch somebody go up against their boss like that.
Right.
I think the heel general manager. So I think AJ only has so much time in the seat of
power. She has so much time, and to be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if they found a way to bring back Laurinaitis somehow.
Yeah.
It seems like something that he would kind of do, like, you know, find his way to weasel his way back kind of thing. Because, I mean, I know he's still with the company. I know that they still love him on the camera. And to a certain extent, it did work. I mean, because we hated his guts. But we hated his guts for more than...
Entertainingly so.
Right. So I have a feeling that they're not done with him on screen yet.
I can see that. I don't know. I enjoyed Laurinaitis more than you did. Like, I thought he was a good, weird, kooky heel.
Well, you were more of the thing, like, it could have been Teddy Long. You know, I think you hate
yes.
Teddy Long more than you like John
Laurinaitis. I did have nightmares that Teddy Long might show up twice a week on my TV. And that's...
I mean, we got plenty of freaking tag teams as it is, so...
I can't have that.
Not that big of a jump.
But so...
And everyone at the beginning of the show would be announced to wrestling The Undertaker!
One-on-one with The Undertaker. But then, good guy Daniel Bryan's nice enough to clear out the ring for the next segment all by himself.
Such a generous individual.
Like, what a decent guy.
It's like, oh, that pillow looks heavy. Let me lift that over my head and throw it. And place, you know, throw it over so they can, you know, they don't have to lift it out of the ring. They could just carry it out from there. And the canopy, he just flipped that over so no one had to lift, you know. Because not everyone knows how to lift the correct way. You know,
they
lift for their back. And that's a terrible way. Like, so many people ruin their backs that way.
Thank you, D. Bryan, for helping out there. Clearing it out for Punk.
And this is the... And those 2 weeks of helping out with my uncle's furniture business, I got to use that expertise well on the show, finally.
There you go.
Worst 2 weeks.
I have to point out, so Punk and Daniel Bryan are yelling at each other's faces.
Yes.
And Daniel Bryan's talking about the fact that he's the greatest of all time. And he says greatest
time.
Of all time, like 4 or 5 times in a row there.
Yeah.
And as I'm listening to this greatest of all time, I'm like, greatest of all time, greatest G of O, all A, time T, goat. Goat face. Did I not just blow your mind?
No, you just made me feel sorry for you that you were overthinking this.
So they both agree.
Who thinks of that? Who... Do you really think the writers were sitting there and be like,
No. How can I think it's a total coincidence.
Uh-huh.
That CM Punk named the first animal he could think of, probably right after shooting that Raw 1000 promo where he had to deal with literal goats. And it's a giant coincidence. But it's humorous, nonetheless.
We should put that on Reddit. It's just a side note. Has to happen. Anyways. yeah.
Then The Rock comes out.
And he came out. He made some jokes at Daniel Bryan's expense, as The Rock does from time to time. And then he turned his attention to CM Punk, which when he, you know, he got a little bit more serious and he talked about, you know, winning the championship, and he announced that he is going to have his title shot at Royal Rumble against whoever's the champion going to be, or whoever the champion's going to be at the time, and Punk's like, let me fill in the blank for you, you're going to be facing me. And, you know, then Daniel Bryan came back in, and he kind of reasserted himself, and I don't know, it was kind of nice to see someone, like, really get in Brock's face, like, both CM Punk and really Daniel Bryan did.
Right. Well, alright. So, Rock announces that he will be going after the title at Royal Rumble. First reaction was, is the Royal Rumble not going to end the Royal Rumble this year? Because I can't imagine that happening, but at the same time, I can't imagine them having a pay-per-view with The Rock and The Rock not being in the last match of the night.
Here's the thing that I... a scenario ran in my mind. I'm thinking whoever he does face, they have the match just for the Royal Rumble, and whoever loses ends up being the last entrant into the Royal Rumble, and they end up winning, setting them up for a rematch. Because I'm assuming, you know, and I mean that would probably work best if there was some sort of interference or some sort of shenanigans going on to cause that person to lose, and they felt slighted. And
I mean, I think we are pretty much on the same page in assuming that The Rock will pretty much be there from Rumble to WrestleMania and then be gone again. And so,
yeah, I mean, so that would really work better for Rock to win the Royal Rumble. Yeah. He doesn't have to be on the next pay-per-view.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know. Chance. Yeah, I don't know how, if he's going to, you know, how he's going to defend. But the thing is, if The Rock wins the title, that means The Rock has to lose the title. And has to lose it in a way that doesn't merit some sort of legitimate rematch or anything.
Right.
So.
And, I mean, depending on how closely they want to follow the rule book, he would have to defend it within 30 days.
Right.
Or vacate the title.
Right. And The Rock hasn't lost a match since Goldberg.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, he's wrestled, like, 2 matches since then, but...
Yeah.
The next up is The Miz is back. And our new IC.
First off, I love the, Bret Hart came out, he was the guest ring announcer, and he gave a really heartfelt, you know, intro to it about how the Intercontinental Championship means a lot to him, and brought out Christian, and then he was like, and The Miz. Cue music. And I'm like, that... I love Bret Hart. That was fantastic. Miz is the Intercontinental Champion. And again, had a moment where he was legitimately touched by it until he realized that he was going to have to get back in heel character mode and, you know, say his line. But up until then, it looked like he was having a big moment because that does mean he's now a Triple Crown champion.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, he's been WWE champion, US champion, and Intercontinental.
Well, I think Intercontinental means a lot more to some guys because of the status that it used to have. Like
the
status
that it used to have and the guys who have held that title.
Right. Like we've talked about it like at SummerSlam when they play those SummerSlam rewinds and to like see what people go through all for the IC championship.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's really the only belt that Chris Jericho ever cared about in real life. Like, you know, not kayfabe, not character-wise. You know, that's why he's held the Intercontinental Championship more than anyone, because that's the belt that he felt most passionate about. And, a lot of guys do feel the same way because of the history, because of the lore that it has of... I mean, so many great, great wrestlers before them.
Right. So I'm hoping Miz continues what Cody Rhodes did and, like, really re-legitimizes this. And especially with SummerSlam coming up, like, that's a perfect time to do a fantastic Intercontinental feud and, you know, really, really build something there. And bring the Miz back. 'Cause, God, I really want the Miz to be a big deal.
I know, and I think this time away helped a lot. And for him to come back the way that he did is good news. Is really good news for him, and big. It seems like a big deal that he's back.
Yeah. So, next is Triple H and
Brock. Well, and Paul Heyman first.
Yeah, and Paul Heyman. I was talking with my brother, who, you know, will, like, come in and out sometimes when I'm watching wrestling, so he's, you know, aware of the characters and, you know, who's a heel and who's a face, but not much beyond that. But I was explaining to him, I was like, so this guy, Paul Heyman, he's basically there because, you know, he's a really good talker, and for no other reason, you know, but he's there to talk because Brock can't. And he's like, You really, they would hire somebody just for talking? Like, I get that that is, you know, he's like, I get that that might help boost them, but, like, just for talking, really? And then Paul Heyman, like, right as he finished saying that, Paul Heyman does that, Brock Lesnar! And my brother goes, oh, yeah, I see it now.
Yeah, yeah. It's an idea that does seem kind of silly when you think about it. Until you see it in practical use, and until you see it actually work in the sense that Paul Heyman makes it work. It's just fun to listen to and fun to watch. Especially when your only other option is to have Brock talk for himself, and that is sad. Doesn't work with a live feed. And so Paul Heyman comes out. He trash talks with Triple H, brings up Triple H's kid, and Triple H says, you know, you don't talk about my family or my kids, which I really thought those things were the same. But that's just me. He throws in one more shot at the kids, and then Stephanie shows up, and I felt pretty awesome at that moment because she is golden on screen. Always has been.
I really like Stephanie. I wish Stephanie had more of an on-screen role.
Me too.
Especially because she's one of the ones who, like, you know, she's always there.
I would have been so happy if they brought her in as the GM.
Yeah. I would love to see her.
Because she's so good in a powerful position, you know, that kind of character.
Right.
And so basically both of them just start being a star all over Paul Heyman and talking about his kids and how they are ashamed of him and all that stuff, and then we hear Bork Bork's music. And
isn't that nice of the WWE to, like, play his music anyway? Like, I'm suing you, but we'll play your music.
Exactly. So he borks on up to the screen, or not the screen, to the ring, and starts to bork all over Triple H. But Triple H goes all King of Kings on him, and Lesnar just kind of borks it out of there.
Yeah.
And that's right. Brock Lesnar is now a Smurf, if you haven't noticed by my description.
So, I get that it's the big, monumental episode, and that it's supposed to be full of feel-good moments and kind of things, but we're starting to get to the point where, like, at Survivor Series last year, we're like, John Cena can beat both of these guys all by himself, but he's gonna call in The Rock anyway. So,
right.
You know, it's like, I'm not really concern for Triple H now because I'm seeing him beating up Lesnar all the time.
Right.
So.
I don't know. It just seems like they don't need it. I mean, I know they're using Lesnar because they have that 1-year contract. I don't think it was necessary for him to come back.
I don't know. Like, the thing is, I still really like that Extreme Rules match he had with Cena.
Yeah.
And I could see him having a nice Triple H feud and then a nice feud with somebody else, hopefully Undertaker, for WrestleMania. But he's gotta look like a monster. And he can. That's the thing, is like, he can. That's what he does. You know? Because he makes up for the terrible talking by looking like he hits people with trucks.
Yeah.
And so, do that. Don't have him, you know, scurry away.
Right. I mean, yeah, he can definitely save. He can definitely make up for that if he just completely demolishes Triple H at SummerSlam.
I'd be really interested in that.
I would be too.
So, I don't want him to, I know they have him for a year, but I don't need him to come in, have
three or four different feuds where he loses every single one. Because right. then by WrestleMania, it'll be like, he's going to lose again because he hasn't won a match since coming back to WWE. So.
Yeah, like, he's got absolutely no momentum on his side.
Right.
And that's what happens when you negotiate a deal where he, you know, only has to show up a certain number of Monday Night Raws in the year and they use it all up in the first 2 months.
Yep. I mean, well, if they got Paul Heyman, like, that's why it's like, it's not over yet. If they would just, they're booking Paul Heyman great. Paul Heyman's yeah. sounding awesome. They just need yep. to book Brock like he's a force to be reckoned with and not the way he looks right now. Yep. Next up is Heath Slater gets squashed.
By everyone.
Yes.
All of the legends come back. His match is up against Lita.
God, I miss Lita.
I miss Lita too. And
I forgot how much I miss Lita.
And then she brings out the APA, which I love the APA. I didn't like JBL on his own, but the APA I freaking adore. Just because Farouk used to be my favorite.
Yeah.
It was like Shawn Michaels and then Farouk. I don't know why, but I always loved Ron Simmons. I mean, how could you
not? How do you not love Ron Simmons?
Yeah, but, you know. But even when he was just Farouk with Nation of Domination, I mean, his early days is, you know, a little bit too far back for me. But still. It was just really awesome to see those two guys. No. Even if he really didn't do anything. JBL still can deliver one crazy freaking clothesline.
I would be okay with JBL coming back for a little bit.
Mm.
I mean, I really dug JBL at the time. Like, towards the end.
When used correctly. At the end, I didn't really like him.
I like JBL.
I mean, he really didn't do anything at the end. At the end, he was basically using Shawn Michaels as, you know, his pawn to do whatever he wished.
Well, to me, it's a better version of what they're trying to do with Del Rio now. Like, he made that work better for me. And that's...
Well, Del Rio is pretty much just copying JBL at this point.
Yeah. But he's one I would be totally fine with him coming back. And Lita. Like, that's the message of this match for me. Was like, can Lita come back, please?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, medical reasons.
And well, part of it is because, like, going back, I watched the Edge documentary, the new one, on Netflix fairly recently.
You think you know me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good.
And so that made me want to see that ladder match again. And the tables, ladder, and chair match.
WrestleMania 17. I know what you're talking about.
Which I had on the Decade of Dissidence. And so I had to like break out the old Edge DVD.
The Decade of what?
Dissidence. Decadence.
Decadence. Decadence.
Why did I say that?
No, that's why I had to stop you.
That's like
and make fun of you and point and laugh at you.
You're totally right, but I can't even remember what I said wrong.
Decidence. Yeah, it was great to see her, but anyway, you know, seeing her do the Twist of Fate was like, oh, the Hardy Boys.
Well, the thing is,
they could have been part of this. They could have been part of a really cool moment if they were just not idiots.
Nope, they're mid-carding TNA right now.
Well, one of them's mid-carding TNA. One of them's... Even TNA was like, nope.
Well, the thing is, watching that match again, Lita took a serious beating in that match.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
I forgot how, like, that they used to do that. That the Demons... Like, China fought Mick Foley at points.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, Chris Jericho's first run was against China.
Yeah.
For the Intercontinental... I think it was the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But a different time.
A whole new world.
Next, I think, is Kane versus the Jobbers of SmackDown.
Versus just all of the Jobbers. Tyler Rex, Kurt Hawkins, Camacho, and Hunico.
To be totally fair,
led by freaking
Jinder Mahal.
Jinder Mahal, and it's just like, is this necessary?
To be totally fair, if you had told me ahead of time that Jinder Mahal would appear at all on Raw 1000, I would have gladly bet you millions of dollars, and I would now be millions of dollars poorer.
You are absolutely right. Yep. But I mean, the big draw for this segment was, you know, Undertaker coming out and beginning a brief Brothers of Destruction reunion, which is fantastic.
It is pretty fantastic. I really would have liked Kane to mention, like, this would have been a great time for him to do that appear in the ring thing, if Kane's about to get beat down.
Yeah.
And Undertaker decides to do the entrance that takes 29 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, way to have my back there, bro.
And take also,
I could have been beaten up by now.
We absolutely have to mention that the thing the that gave the Undertaker the most trouble is that hood, that pesky hood.
Well, at least he still has. At least his neck is still used to doing the hair flip.
Yeah.
Move.
No, that's all the thing, he was doing. Like, he had to do it 7 times. Like, that's a L'Oreal commercial.
He is your Venus.
So.
And your fire. Your desire.
And I'm assuming Undertaker's now going to disappear again. For
yeah, but, you know, he came up with an awesome jacket.
Yep.
Or the trench coat. I do love that coat.
And finally, we end the show with our main event.
Champion. And the champion actually got to come to the ring second. For yeah. once.
As it that should be. That always bothers me a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, because they always do that for Cena. Cena always comes out last, but this one they did it the other way around, and I felt like finally, you know, they got that right. The match itself was kind of slow and kind of boring.
Yeah. You know?
Considering, I mean, you know, you can't help but compare it to Money in the Bank from 2011 between those two, and that one just had a great ebb and flow to it.
Right.
This one just seemed really slow, and it ended up getting spoiled by freaking Big Show, which wasn't a surprise because we hadn't seen him all night. We knew he was bound to show up eventually. Came out and punched John Cena, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, knockout punch. No, he beats him up a little bit and then knockout punch.
And that led to CM Punk, you know, being conflicted because the referee had gotten knocked out. First of all, referees, it just seems like their characters cannot take a bump without dying. Just like you bump into them and they're down for like 20 minutes.
They are, but these men are dedicated to their jobs because they get knocked out
to their jobs.
To like brain damage levels. And as soon as they're revived, the first thing they do is right back on that mat. I'm like, that is some dedication to your job, sir. I applaud that.
But yeah, finally CM Punk gets the ref back in the ring, covers Cena, and to no one's surprise, Cena kicks out. Cena looks like he's going to pull a Super Cena, you know, completely ignoring the fact that he got punched in the face.
Knockout punch. It's called the knockout punch.
Knockout punch. Yeah.
It's got one job.
Coming back. Yeah. And he gets the pin on CM Punk, and then Big Show breaks that up. And next thing you know, we hear, "If you smell," and here comes The Rock. And The Rock just lays out Big Show, goes for the people's elbow, and right before he's going to deliver it, here comes CM Punk with a flying, awesome-looking clothesline. And everyone's just kind of left, like, what just happened? And CM Punk is just kind of stoic and not really doing or saying much, picks up his title and walks away.
The Rock, meanwhile, looks like he died in the ring.
I've seen GIFs of it, and basically he looks like he's a fish out of water, just like...
Yeah.
I'm like, I've seen, I mean, yeah, it was a pretty good clothesline, so. And so that's the moment we're left with, and now we're, everyone is having the argument over what does this mean for CM Punk? Is he a heel? Is he still a face? Is he an in-betweener? How are they going to play this? Is he going to be a champion until Royal Rumble? Joel, what's your initial reaction?
Well, okay. My initial reaction is that they are wanting to turn him heel, and that might be our summer thing. But here's the thing. I cannot think of a situation or a scenario or a setup that will cause me to boo CM Punk. Like, unless, yeah. I mean, there has to be, like, a completely drastic character change.
Yes.
For that to happen. And, like,
CM Punk would have to have some severe, like, brain damage or something before we boo him. Like, right. He would have to completely change who he is and how he does things.
Right. I mean, I've seen several things that people have been talking about, posting a lot of his late Ring of Honor stuff.
Right.
Where something similar is going on.
And it's, you know, I mean, speak specifically to the devil or the snake in the grass.
The stupid old man. Promo. The snake.
Yeah. He himself has been referencing that for days on Twitter. Or right. Months, really. And it kind of makes you think that they're going to dip in that, because they dipped in that well a little bit, you know, for the whole pipe bomb thing. It just seems like they're going to go back to that, and I'm okay with it. And I have a scenario in my head of how I think it's going to kind of play out. Last summer, CM Punk went off on everybody. And I specifically think of the contract signing between CM Punk and John Cena, where CM Punk pretty much railed on both Rock and both Cena. And then after SummerSlam, he went full face.
Yeah.
Now, I'm thinking that maybe CM Punk knew where he wanted to get, and he knew that the best and quickest way to do that was become a good guy and just play up the good guy role for as long as he could until he was able to strike. Specifically, let's just say specifically against The Rock. And now that he got his opportunity, now that he was the one that no one suspected, because, I mean, during that entire time, like, every time Big Show came out, and then when The Rock came out, you saw CM Punk kind of like just crouched in the corner.
Right.
Or on the floor, not even in the ring. And it just seems like no one suspected him of being the one to stick it to The Rock. And he did, and when he initially did it, it felt a lot like CM Punk kind of like holding his ground, like making his claim kind of thing, like almost like a territorial kind of thing. And so maybe, I'm thinking maybe next week on Raw, we get the whole, you know, the whole line where he said that the greatest thing, or the most, the worst thing the devil, I don't know what he said. But
the greatest thing the devil ever did was convincing people he didn't exist.
Exactly. Maybe, you know, he's saying like, you know, I fooled all of you, I did the whole good guy thing, and I saw my opportunity, and so I went for the guy who's been ruining it for me. I went up against John Cena, knocked him down because, and he could still bring up the whole, like, you know, I was champion for so long, yet Cena was still getting the spotlight kind of thing.
Right. And the thing is, like, the logical explanation, and that's what we need to get, you know, the next episode is, whatever promo Cena cut or Punk cuts needs to be that logical reasoning for why he attacked The Rock.
Right.
And the best thing that I the best scenario, I figure, is this. I'm tired of being a mid-card champion, which is basically right. what I've been treated as, you know, Cena getting all these things. And it was just, and, you know, and he can bring up, you know, The Rock shows up, you know, once every 6 months and still, you know, gets to have a title shot because he wants a title shot.
Right.
And, you know, he's and just a kind of a, the, I was not going to let the Raw 1000 end with The Rock music playing or something like that.
Yeah.
I would be really interested in some kind of reference of, you know, I came back to change things and it's been a year and, you know, they're still putting up the same unacceptable stuff.
Right.
Kind of thing. I'd be really interested to expand on, it was just a little bit of like the original stuff from last year, but the I'm a Paul Heyman guy line. And now that Paul Heyman's back, I would love to see some sort of extended, you know, Heyman Punk kind of thing.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That seemed like... It would feel like almost a crime if we never got to see that.
Yeah. But the thing still stands, like, none of this stuff will make me boo Punk. Like, every one of these scenarios... I'm gonna sit here and be like, "Yeah, Punk's the good guy in that one. Punk is the one who is, you know, there and I'm with him and I'm behind him." And we said it before with the talking about the GM. So much of Raw is this evil corporation and the anti-heroes, the anti-hero wrestlers who are fighting the corporation for the sport that we love or whatever. And Punk fills that role. Punk is that kind of character who is an anti-hero. And at the same time, you know, Punk is one of their top merchandise sellers right now. And yeah. I don't think they are super eager to drop that.
No, not at all.
So, I think the best analogy, I guess, that I've seen on the internet since that happening is somebody had stills of that, of him attacking The Rock with some modified dialogue from the end of Dark Knight, which is
I saw that,
Dad,
too, yeah.
Why is he attacking The Rock? Because we have to boo him now, son. But he's the good guy. But he's the heel that they need, not the heel they deserve. But I was like, yeah, that's yeah. where we're at. So
it fits.
It fits surprisingly well.
And I mean, you know, we already seen how benevolent CM Punk can be. Like, you know, he made his championship match early in the last pay-per-view so he wouldn't miss the Breaking Bad premiere.
Yes. That's the only way I can sleep at night is believing that.
He is a benevolent
so
heel.
it's the big thing is just kind of where do we go from here, and it feels like they have a genuine plan. That's a scary thing to think, but like, it feels like that they have an idea between now and Royal Rumble for these guys. I really like that they haven't announced that it's Rock versus Blank, and we don't have the waiting game that we had for WrestleMania.
But I think if I don't know the way last Monday Night felt, it has to be CM Punk, don't you think?
I'm waiting for CM Punk to explain himself.
Okay. Fair enough.
Because unless John Cena falls out of super favor with WWE, which I don't think is happening, I think there's a fair chance for a Rock and John rematch. So that would have to be Rock beats Punk and is champion until Mania and Cena gets the title back.
Yeah.
And so, which, you know, it doesn't sound far-fetched or anything, but...
No, not at all.
We will see in the upcoming months.
We will.
And so, that was Raw 1000, and I think that about does it for this week.
That does it for me. And make sure that if you have any comments or concerns or thoughts or hatred, you can send us an email at classofringattire@gmail.com.
Please follow us on Twitter at CRAttire. We tweet all Mondays and Sundays that pay-per-views happen, and the occasional Thursday and Friday, depending on how much we can stomach it.
And if you're listening to this from wrestling.insidepulse.com, you know, leave us a comment on there. We'd love to get the feedback from you guys.
And finally, we also have a Tumblr, classyringattire.tumblr.com, where you can find old episodes of this podcast and many other wrestling shenanigans. Until then, stay classy and huzzah.